Welcome back, everyone. Ready for another deep dive?
Always.
Awesome. Today, we're going beyond the typical stuff, the Hebrew Bible, to explore what's called extra-canonical literature.
Ah, yes, the stuff they didn't want you to know.
Right. These texts weren't included in the Jewish canon,
Right.
but they were written in response to the Hebrew Bible. So they give us this really cool look
Yeah.
into the diverse Jewish communities from way back when.
Yeah, think about it like overhearing a conversation
Okay.
that's been going on for centuries,
Okay.
and you get like
Ooh.
a much richer understanding
Oh,
of the
yeah.
world that surrounded the Bible.
Okay.
Like it really adds depth and nuance to what you probably already know.
Okay, so why should we care about these texts? If they weren't good enough for the official canon, then why bother?
I get that. Well, because of the four C's.
The four C's.
Yeah, the canon, community, commentary, and continuity.
Okay.
So these texts were written in response to the Hebrew Bible.
Okay.
Like they held it as sacred.
Okay.
So that's canon, the first C.
Got it.
And they offer us a really valuable insight into how these different communities actually like interpreted and apply the scriptures. And these interpretations reveal a really incredible diversity of beliefs and practices
Yeah.
that existed within ancient Judaism.
So you're saying it wasn't just one monolithic thing?
Not at all. It's
Yeah.
C number two community.
Gotcha. Okay, so that's two C's. What about the other two?
All right, so commentary C number three is that these texts provide us with like an ancient commentary on the Hebrew Bible. They show us how these communities like understood and lived out its teachings, in their daily lives.
So how they actually applied those ancient teachings to their real lives.
Yeah, and the last C, continuity, demonstrates how these ancient communities tried to bridge the gap between the promises and teachings of the Hebrew Bible and like the realities of their own lives.
That's so interesting because that's something that we still grapple with today, right?
Totally. It's timeless.
Okay, so before we jump into specific examples,
Sure.
let's take a step back and talk about the Hebrew Bible itself. Was there any sense of its structure even before it was officially a single collection?
Oh, yeah, for sure. There's evidence suggesting a structure was recognized as early as the second century BCE.
Wow. Okay.
For example, the prologue of Ecclesiasticus distinguishes between law, prophets, and other books, which sounds a lot like the three-part structure we know.
The Torah, prophets, and writings.
Exactly. And there are references in the Gospel of Luke and a Dead Sea Scroll that also point to this growing awareness.
Okay, so even back then, there was this sense of what was in and what was out,
Right.
which led to some texts getting excluded.
Yeah.
Now, I know you wanted to talk about some fascinating figures who represent this extra canonical literature. Where should we start?
Let's kick things off with Philo of Alexandria.
Okay, Philo of Alexandria.
He was a first century Jewish philosopher who lived in a community that was just like a melting pot.
Alexandria, that was like the center of learning, wasn't it?
Exactly. It was a major hub where Jewish thought was like super influenced by Greek philosophy,
Got it.
especially by this school of thought called Neoplatonism.
Neoplatonism. I don't know if I'm
So
familiar.
imagine this. Neoplatonism emphasized a transcendent realm of perfect forms,
Okay.
and the physical world is just a shadow of that realm. So Philo was trying to like reconcile this with the very concrete historical narratives of the Hebrew Bible.
So he was trying to bridge those two worlds.
Exactly. And he did that by developing a method of interpretation
Oh, this is interesting.
called allegorical interpretation. So instead of taking those narratives literally,
Okay.
he looked for deeper symbolic meanings that aligned with Greek philosophy.
Ah, so he was reading between the lines.
Yeah, it allowed him to find philosophical truth within the stories.
Okay, give me an example of how he actually did this.
Okay, so think about Genesis 3.24, where God stations cherubim and a flaming sword to guard the Garden of Eden.
After Adam and Eve are expelled.
Right. So for Philo, this wasn't just a garden. It was an allegory.
Gotcha.
The cherubim represent God's goodness and authority,
Okay.
while the flaming sword symbolizes the Logos.
Wait, Logos? Isn't that central to John's gospel?
It is. And this isn't a coincidence. The concept of Logos was like super hot
Okay.
in first century philosophical and religious discussions.
Got it.
But here's the thing. Philo used Logos in many ways,
Okay.
like reason, word, and even correspondence between God and humanity.
Yeah.
But for him, it was an abstract principle, never a person.
Oh, so that's the difference. John claims the word became flesh.
Right.
That would have been completely foreign to Philo.
Totally.
It's so fascinating how these extra canonical texts shed light.
Yeah.
Not just on the biblical world, but on the development of early Christian thought.
It's amazing. And that's just the start.
Okay, so what's next?
Well, there's this other fascinating figure. Gives us a window into the different Jewish sects of the time. Have you heard of Josephus?
Josephus? Yeah, he wrote some historical accounts, right?
Yeah, he did. Josephus was a first century Jewish historian writing for a Roman audience.
Interesting.
And he provides these invaluable insights into the Jewish world during the time of Jesus and the early church.
Okay.
What makes him really interesting is his background.
What do you mean?
He was a Jewish governor in Galilee.
Okay.
But ended up aligning with the Romans after the Jewish revolt.
Oh, wow.
In 66 CE.
So he had a complicated relationship with his own heritage.
Definitely.
So what did he write?
Well, his two big ones are the Jewish War and the Antiquities of the Jews.
And Antiquities is relevant to our deep dive.
Absolutely. Because it describes all the various Jewish sects of his time.
I've always wanted to learn more about, like, the Pharisees and Sadducees.
Right.
What did Josephus say about them?
So he described the Pharisees as being known for their strict adherence to Jewish law.
Okay.
And their belief in free will and resurrection.
Mm.
And the Sadducees, they focused mainly on the Torah and rejected the idea of an afterlife.
So some pretty big differences.
Yeah, for sure.
Did he mention any other groups?
Oh, yeah. He also described the Essenes.
The Essenes.
These guys were known for their communal living and emphasis on purity rituals.
Right.
Like, big time.
Interesting.
They believed that all things were predetermined by God and really strongly emphasized living a righteous life.
Okay.
They even practiced celibacy and opposed slavery, which is pretty unique.
Wow. So all these different expressions of Judaism coexisting.
Totally.
Did he mention any other groups?
He briefly mentions a fourth sect, the followers of Judas the Galilean.
Oh, okay. Never heard of them.
They were known for their, like, super strong desire for liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And they believed that God alone should rule them.
Wow.
Talk about tension with the Roman authorities.
Right.
Yeah. And sadly, we know that infighting among these different Jewish groups really contributed to the fall of Jerusalem.
It's crazy how even within a shared faith, there can be such deep divisions.
Absolutely. But speaking of historical figures, did you know that Josephus also wrote about some people who pop up in the New Testament?
Oh, really?
Yeah. He even mentions Jesus.
I know there's debate about, like,
the
authenticity of some of Josephus's descriptions.
Right.
But what did he actually say about Jesus?
Well, he called Jesus a wise man.
Okay.
Who performed wonderful works and drew followers from both Jews and Gentiles.
Oh, interesting.
He also said that Jesus was condemned by Pilate because of Jewish leaders and that the tribe of Christians who followed him persisted.
A tribe of Christians. That's an interesting choice of words.
Right. And that's actually one of the reasons why scholars think this part of his account is genuine.
Okay, I see what you mean.
Like, a Christian writer would never have called the early church a tribe.
That's true. It's like he was observing this new movement from an outsider's perspective.
Oh, exactly.
Wow, that's fascinating.
It is.
So did he mention anyone else from the New Testament?
He did. He wrote about John the Baptist.
Okay.
He said that he called for righteousness and piety through baptism.
Yeah.
And that Herod executed him because he was scared of John's influence.
Which matches what the Gospels say.
Exactly.
It's cool to see these biblical accounts corroborated by someone writing history at the time.
It really adds another layer, doesn't it?
It does. Okay, I have to ask, did Josephus write anything about Herod Agrippa?
Oh, yeah, he did. And his account is just as captivating as the one in Acts.
Oh, you can't just leave me hanging like that. What happened?
Okay, so picture this. Herod Agrippa is in Caesarea throwing this lavish party for the Roman emperor.
Okay.
And on the second day of the festivities, he comes into the theater wearing this awesome garment made entirely of silver.
Whoa!
I know, right?
Talk about making an entrance.
So the sun hits his silver robe and creates this blinding glow, almost supernatural.
Oh, wow.
And the crowd goes wild. They start proclaiming Agrippa as a god.
Oh, no. Not a good move.
Nope. And instead of stopping them, Agrippa, full of pride, just soaks it all in.
So what happened? Did lightning strike him down right then and there?
Not quite.
Yeah.
But close. Josephus says that at that very moment, Agrippa is hit with this searing pain in his belly.
Oh.
And he realizes that his time is up and that his pride led to his downfall.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So Josephus then goes on to describe his death.
Yeah.
Emphasizing how quick and severe his illness was. You know, it's like his reminder that even the most powerful figures are subject to forces beyond their control.
It's kind of a timeless story, isn't it?
Totally. About hubris and fate.
It makes you think about those forces that play in our own lives.
For sure. This is just one story from the vast world of extra-canonical literature. We haven't even touched the Book of Enoch yet.
The Book of Enoch? I'm ready to dive into its mysteries.
We'll save that adventure for our next episode.
Can't wait.
Until then, keep those thinking caps on.
Always.
You never know what awesome discoveries await in these ancient texts.
I'm excited to find out. Welcome back. I'm so ready to uncover the secrets of the Book of Enoch.
Oh, it's a wild ride.
Okay, so first things first, remind me, what's pseudepigrapha again?
Yeah. So basically, these are texts that claim to be written by like a famous biblical figure, but were actually written much later.
Okay. So the Book of Enoch claims to be written by the Enoch.
According to Genesis, he was taken up to heaven without dying.
Right. Walked with God. So if he didn't actually write it, why say he did?
Okay. So you got to remember that ancient ideas about authorship were different.
Okay.
They attributed a text to a big name to give it weight.
So like, hey, even Enoch thought this was important.
Exactly. And it let them explore controversial ideas.
Ooh, using Enoch as a shield.
Kind of.
So what kind of ideas are we talking about in Enoch?
Well, remember that passage in Genesis about the sons of God mating with human women?
Yeah, the Nephilim, the giants.
Yep. He goes deep into that story.
Okay, I've been listening.
Gives you the whole backstory of the fall of the angels.
Okay.
And how they interacted with human women.
Okay.
And all the corruption that followed.
So it's like a prequel.
Yeah. To the flood narrative.
So what kind of corruption are we talking about here?
The Nephilims are portrayed as these, like, monstrous beings who caused chaos, violence, warfare.
Oh, wow.
They really mess things up.
So they get what's coming to them in the flood.
They do. God wipes out their wickedness.
Okay.
But Enoch adds another layer.
What's that?
The idea of a final judgment.
Okay.
Where the fallen angels and the Nephilim face the consequences.
It's not just a flood. It's like a cosmic courtroom.
Yeah.
That's intense.
And this focus on judgment and the afterlife.
Yeah.
That's huge in Enoch.
Okay.
It talks about heaven and hell and the rewards for the righteous and the punishments for the wicked.
Wow. It's like peeking into the ancient imagination about what happens after we die.
Exactly.
I love how these texts expand on things from the Hebrew Bible.
Yeah, they fill in the gaps.
So Enoch talks about angels, giants, judgment. What else?
Oh, there's cosmology and astronomy, too.
Okay, hold on. Cosmology and astronomy.
Yeah. It has a unique take on how the universe is structured.
Okay.
And how the stars and planets move.
Whoa, that's pretty advanced for back then.
I know, right? It's like a science textbook. Mixed with apocalyptic visions.
And theological reflections.
It's a wild mix.
It must have blown people's minds.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But for them, these ideas weren't just theories.
Yeah.
They used them to understand their place in the universe.
So they were trying to make sense of it all.
Exactly.
Okay, so what about Enoch himself?
Oh, yeah. He's the supposed author, after all.
What does the book say about him?
He's portrayed as this righteous dude. Chosen by God to be a messenger.
Okay.
And he goes on these crazy journeys through heaven and hell.
Oh, hold on. Journeys through heaven and hell.
Yeah. He witnesses all these mysteries of the universe.
So he's like a cosmic tourist.
Kind of.
That's amazing. What did he learn from those journeys?
Well, his experiences are used to explore themes like divine justice, the nature of good and evil, and living a righteous life.
So those big questions we all ask.
Yeah.
It's amazing how these texts weave together biblical stories, philosophy, and mystical visions.
I know. It's really cool.
It gives us such a different view of ancient Judaism.
Totally.
Okay. But did these texts have any influence outside the Jewish community?
You mean like on early Christianity?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Really?
Big time.
But they didn't consider it scripture, did they?
No, but it definitely influenced their thinking.
How so?
Well, think about it. Enoch describes angels, demons, the afterlife.
Okay, yeah.
Those ideas shaped early Christian views.
I see what you mean.
And its focus on judgment and resurrection.
Yeah.
That aligns with the New Testament, too.
So even though it wasn't official, it still had an impact.
Yeah. And remember the concept of logos.
Yeah, the divine word.
Enoch uses similar language to describe a divine being who mediates between God and humanity.
Oh, wow. So that idea was floating around in both Jewish and Christian circles.
Exactly.
That's so cool. This is why I love exploring these extra canonical texts.
Me too.
They challenge us to broaden our understanding of the Bible
yeah.
and its historical context.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've seen a lot of different beliefs in these texts.
Right.
Why do you think they were so popular back then?
Well, think about the times.
Okay.
Political turmoil.
Yeah.
Social upheaval.
Mm-hmm.
Religious persecution.
It was a crazy time.
People were looking for answers.
Yeah, I can see that.
They wanted reassurance.
Okay.
Because the world felt chaotic and unfair.
So these texts offered comfort.
Yeah, and guidance.
Did they offer any solutions?
Oh, yeah. Many of them, like Enoch.
Yeah.
They stressed staying true to your faith.
Okay.
And living a righteous life no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
They offered hope that God was in control.
Okay.
And that justice would win in the end.
So resilience and hope in tough times.
Exactly.
A message that's still relevant today.
Totally. And they also helped people understand the fight between good and evil.
Yeah, like a cosmic battle.
Yeah. You're part of something bigger.
That's powerful.
It is. But, you know, not everyone liked these texts.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Some people thought they were heretical or dangerous,
while
others just preferred the established scriptures.
So like any new idea,
yeah.
some embrace it and some resist it.
Exactly.
But these disagreements show us that religious thought was always evolving.
Absolutely. Faith isn't static.
Right.
It's constantly changing and adapting.
Okay, so let's get back to Josephus and his accounts.
Sounds good.
He talks about Herod Agrippa, right?
Yes.
So there were a few different Herods in the Gospels.
Yeah.
Where does Agrippa fit in?
He was Herod the Great's grandson.
The one who ruled during Jesus' birth.
Yep.
That's a tough act to follow.
It is. But Agrippa was ambitious.
Okay.
And he was really good at politics.
Hmm.
He managed to stay in good with the Roman emperors and the Jewish people.
Talk about playing both sides. What impact did he have on the Jewish world?
Well, he held a lot of power in Jewish politics and religion.
Okay.
Emperor Claudius made him king of Judea.
Wow, really?
Yeah, in 41 CE.
Okay.
And he ruled for a while trying to balance his loyalty to Rome with his duties to the Jewish people.
That must have been tough. What did Josephus say about his relationship with the Jewish people?
Josephus says that they liked him for a while.
Okay.
Especially because he upheld Jewish law and custom.
Hmm.
He even expanded the temple in Jerusalem.
Wow. He was trying to be a defender of the faith.
Yeah. Kind of the opposite of Herod the Great.
Yeah. Who was known for being brutal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But even though he tried to win them over.
Yeah.
Agrippa's reign was full of political drama.
Okay.
Religious tension.
Mm-hmm.
And a pretty big downfall.
You mentioned his downfall before.
I did.
Yeah.
Well, Josephus says it was sudden and dramatic.
Okay.
Full of hubris and divine judgment.
Okay. I'm on the edge of my seat. Tell me.
So picture this. Agrippa's in Caesarea, throwing this massive party for the Roman emperor. Like games and festivities.
Oh, wow.
Real spectacle.
Okay.
And during this party, things go south.
Okay. How so?
Agrippa walks into the theater wearing this incredible robe made entirely of silver.
What? Okay. That's over the top.
Right.
What happened?
The sun hits the silver.
Yeah.
And it's blinding.
Whoa.
The crowd goes nuts and starts calling Agrippa a god.
Oh, no, that's not good.
Nope. And Agrippa loves it. He lets them.
Bad move.
And right then and there.
Yeah.
He's hit with this horrible pain in his stomach.
Oh, no.
And Josephus says he knows it's over.
Wow.
And that it's his own pride that did him in a tear.
That's intense.
It is. Josephus describes his death in detail.
Yeah.
He says his illness was super fast and really bad.
It's like a classic story
right.
of pride before the fall.
Exactly. And it shows that power doesn't protect you from everything.
It's a story for the ages, isn't it?
It really is.
It's just one of many stories from extra-canonical literature.
I know. It's amazing.
We've only scratched the surface.
Oh, no.
And I can't wait to see what else we uncover.
Me too.
Wow. It's like we've been traveling through time, you know, stepping into this ancient Jewish world.
I know. It's amazing.
And uncovering all these hidden gems,
right.
these extra canonical texts really give us like this deeper understanding of what was going on back then.
Yeah, like we've been peeling back layers of history.
Exactly.
To see all the different beliefs and practices that were happening at the same time
yeah.
as the Bible.
Yeah. We've seen philosophers blending Greek thought with scripture.
Mm-hmm.
Historians writing about the various sects of Judaism, apocalyptic texts,
right.
exploring angels and judgment.
It's been quite the journey.
It really has.
Yeah.
And it shows that the biblical world wasn't this like one size fits all thing.
Definitely not. It was this vibrant mix of different voices and perspective.
All trying to figure out their faith and the world around them.
Exactly.
It's like we've been listening in on a conversation that's been going on for centuries.
Oh, I love that.
A conversation about life, death, and what it all means.
You know what's really cool?
What?
These conversations are still relevant to us today. The things they were worried about.
Yeah.
Their hopes, their questions. Mm. They all connect to our own search for meaning.
We're all part of this bigger human story.
We are. A story that links us across time and cultures.
I love that.
And these extra canonical texts give us this amazing window into that story.
They make us rethink the Bible.
Yeah.
And its context.
They really challenge us to think bigger, don't they?
They do. And, you know, one of the biggest things I've learned from this deep dive is that there were so many different beliefs and interpretations within ancient Judaism.
It wasn't a monolith.
Right. Like, there was no one right way to be Jewish.
Just like today.
Exactly.
It really challenges that idea that there's only one right interpretation of faith, doesn't it?
It does.
Like, faith is alive.
Yeah.
It's always changing.
And adapting.
Yeah.
It's important to remember that.
Totally. We should approach our own faith with humility.
Yeah.
And be open to the fact that we don't know everything.
And there's always more to learn.
Always.
Okay. So we talked about diversity.
Hmm.
But these texts also highlight that we all have to wrestle with the big questions.
Like, why are we here?
Yeah.
What happens when we die?
Exactly. How do we live a good life?
These are the questions that have always been with us.
Yeah.
They challenge us.
And inspire us.
They really make us look inward.
It's like these texts are holding up a mirror.
Oh, I like that.
To our own souls.
It's so true.
Okay, so we're wrapping up our deep dive.
Yeah.
What's the one thing you want our listeners to take away?
I think it's the importance of being curious and open-minded.
Yeah.
Like, these texts push us to go beyond what we think we know.
Yeah.
To explore all the different ideas that have shaped religion.
And that the search for meaning never really ends.
Never. And every new discovery can change how we see ourselves in the world.
I think that's so important today.
Totally.
When we're flooded with information.
Yeah.
And it's hard to know what's true. These texts remind us to think critically, question what we hear.
Yeah.
And be open to new ideas.
It's all about being open.
Exactly. And at the end of the day,
faith
is a personal journey.
It is.
It's different for everyone.
What matters is that we're honest with ourselves and that we're willing to grow and change.
Well said. I feel like we've learned so much today.
Me too.
About these extra canonical texts and the world they come from.
I hope our listeners are inspired to keep exploring these texts.
Me too. There's a whole world of ancient wisdom out there.
Waiting to be discovered.
So keep exploring. Keep questioning.
Keep diving deep.
You never know what you'll find.
Exactly.